Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One of the best in the business, Brad Nessler, in a moment. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. The Chiefs and the Redskins last night at Arrowhead.
Snap to him. Smith looking left. Under pressure, turns back right for the end zone. Caught by Kelce. Touchdown! Kansas City! Kelce draped by Breland. It did not matter. It's a 17-yard strike, and the Chiefs continue their red zone mastery.
Mitch Holfus with the call last night on 101 The Fox. The Chiefs with a touchdown, by the way, in the final play of the game. Wrecked a lot of lines last night and beat the Redskins 29-20. He's made the joke that you're going from Uncle Vern to Cousin Ness, but I've said many times in this show that when you meet Brad Nessler, if you don't like him, then you don't like people. Brad, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
How's it going, my old friend? How you doing?
It's great to hear you again, and it's great to see you on CBS. Must be a lot of fun for you.
It's great. You know, having gone about 2 months last year without football, I was going a little bit stir-crazy, and you learn to appreciate it when you're not around. It was 36 years that I was in a booth either Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, or maybe all three, you know, for that many years in a row. And then so last September and October, to have time on my hands on a weekend was not fun, Steve. So back in the saddle. It's a big saddle to fill, I know that, but it's going well so far.
Yeah, but you know, the guy on the other horse is somebody you know pretty well, because a long time at the ESPN with Gary Danielson. Is it amazing that when two people have chemistry that you can pick up essentially where you left off?
I never really thought it was going to be a hard thing, but I didn't think it was going to be as seamless as it's really been. You know, we kept in contact all those years. I mean, we were a lot of those years together at ESPN and ABC, and then we're still at the same network, only I was with Bob, you know, Greasy and Lynn Swann, and he was with Brent. And so, I mean, we were never that far apart. And then his years with Vern, literally at least once every 2 weeks probably we either talked or text or whatever. I'd call him and say, "You stole my game," and he'd say, "We get first pick." Ha-ha, you know. So, I mean, we never really lost contact. And, you know, our first go-around, it was watching his kids grow up. And now he's got, like, 14 grandkids, so I get to watch them grow up. But, yeah, we got together to do the Missouri Arkansas game the day after Thanksgiving last year. Is actually the first time we've done a game together in, I guess it was something like 16 years. And I really knew 5 minutes into the game that there was really nothing to get used to. I remember coming home and I said to my wife, I said, "Hey, you know, how'd it sound?" And she usually doesn't pay attention, but she usually has the TV on in the house just so she can hear our voices. And she said, "You sound like two 14-year-olds that hadn't gotten together in a while to throw the football around." So it really was no adjustment, and we're having a blast just like we used to. We're just older and our hair's grayer.
Yeah, but he had to stay over at your place for about 3 days because of the hurricanes. That I'm sure that was quite an experience.
Yeah, it was, and we decided, and we both joked about it, and we kind of said it at the same time. We looked at each other, I guess Tuesday night going into Wednesday morning when he had been here since early Sunday. And I said, "You know, I can do 15 games, a bowl game, and all that with you, and we're together Thursday through Sunday morning." And he looks at me and goes, "Yeah, but I don't think we can live together." And I said, "I don't think so either." And I teased him about not knowing how to make a bed. You know, he messed up like three beds in my two houses. And my lake house first, and then we lost power, and then we came over here, and we had a generator. And so we were working by generator power in the kitchen table for about a day and a half, and my wife thought that was hilarious.
What's it been like for you to really just lock in on the SEC and just, you know, really just worry about a certain number of teams instead of having to worry about a country?
Hasn't hit me yet, Steve. Somebody asked me that the other day, and I said, "You know, you got to get back to me, I guess, at the end of this season or the beginning of next season." I've already now done, I know what you're talking about, because I've done Tennessee twice. This week I have Florida again, so I've done them twice in a 3-week span. So it's going to be weird. Although, you know, probably 80% of my games, I would say, in the last 7 years before that with Todd were probably SEC games, so we kind of traveled around the SEC anyway. But it is going to be weird when I start seeing, I know already that I'm going to see, you know, Coach Saban five times, or his team five times, and probably a sixth, you know, if they make the SEC championship game. So from that standpoint, you know, you got to be careful that the stories don't get, you know, stale, or you find new stuff every week, or that you, you know, as you know, it's not always the same audience. Sometimes you got to bring stuff back that you might have done the first week. So it's a little bit different because I'm used to being a little bit more all over the country than just in one conference. But like I said, I've kind of been down this part of the country for a while anyway.
Yeah, no question. You got Florida LSU this week. Florida is under Jim McElwain is 9-1 in one score games, and you of course did one of them, that miraculous finish. What is it about his demeanor, his sideline, how his team handles it, and then of course what you witnessed firsthand?
We don't know if it's just plain luck. You remember when Les Miles went through about 3 years where you wondered how they won the game and how he, you know, didn't manage it so well. I didn't want to say mismanaged, but that was going to be my word. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I sure do.
And so I don't know if Mac's fallen into these things or if it just follows him around or if he makes the right moves at the right time. I don't know, but, you know, he's done a great job. He's got a great record, and sometimes you look at it and I go, I'm not quite sure. You know, he's 16-3 in SEC regular season games, and that's the best Florida start for a coach since Spurrier. So, I mean, you have to look at the results. Sometimes it's not that pretty. In fact, sometimes it's not pretty at all. But, you know, they'll take being 3-1 and 3-0 the conference. And, you know, even the Michigan game, they didn't look terrible in the first half thanks to their defense. Their offense looked terrible, but I don't know. You know, and he keeps changing quarterbacks and flipping things around, and he's lost so many guys. That's where I give him credit, you know, to have had 10 guys suspended and two or three of them are really key players and really good players that could start for anybody in the conference, and they're not there. So he's had to kind of piece everything together, you know, and do it with smoke and mirrors, and so far they're getting away with it.
And then there's the Ed Orgeron part of it over at LSU, and they brought in Matt Canada as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
What's your view of what you're seeing from LSU right now?
I haven't figured out why they can't, and this goes back a couple of coordinators, at least two head coaches. I don't know why they can't find a quarterback. And I'm not putting Danny Etling down. You know, I mean, he's a game manager type of guy and all that kind of stuff. But they have been through so many 4 and supposedly 5-star recruits, and they come in there and they look totally lost. And, you know, I don't know if they're not coaching them up well or if their system is, you know, a little bit flawed. I don't know. But I always look at that program and go, okay, you're going to get defensive backs. I mean, they've had 10 or 12 guys in the last, I don't know, 13 years, you know, in the NFL as starting DBs. So you don't have to worry about that side of the ball so much, at least in the secondary. They've had great running backs, and they've had great receivers. I mean, the last time I guess they had a passing attack that really worked was at Magdeburger, and he had Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. Well, you know, I could have probably thrown to those two guys, I guess. So, you know, they seem to find the good skill guys, but they can't get a guy to get it to them. So I think that's been their problem kind of all along. And I don't know what kind of, you know, they've started one of those go-me funds or go-away funds or something for Ed already. So that's not a good sign, and I got to deal with him on Friday, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I guess he has a $12 million buyout, and somebody started a GoFundMe page. So far, they have $275. My opinion, they're a bit short.
Yeah, they're a little bit short. I think the guy that started it put in the first 200. So, you know, they're not getting a lot of bites, but I have been watching. I turned on Fine Bob Show here a little while ago, and it's a firestorm already, and the same thing's going on with Tennessee. You know, I saw them lose on the last play, and then I saw them get trampled by Georgia. The folks in Knoxville are not happy either. So, you know, there's only about two or three places in the whole conference right now where the fans aren't in an uproar, and that would be Tuscaloosa, Athens, Georgia, and they're coming around a little bit at Auburn right now, but everybody else is not happy.
Right. You know, it's ironic, you talk about like a couple coordinators ago and so forth at LSU. I think the last time I had LSU was with Penn State in that Capital One Bowl in the mud, and they had Jordan Jefferson at quarterback, and they mismanaged the clock that day. But they had LaFell, they had Trendon Holiday, and so forth. They scored 14 points.
Yeah, I know. That's. I mean, they just. That's one spot they can't get it done. I don't know. Just having a quarterback would help.
The Alabama part of it, when you've taken a look at them over the years and the level of high consistency, what is your opinion of what we're watching, maybe in a big picture historical context?
You know, we'll probably gonna look back on it when you and I are in, you know, have walkers and all that kind of stuff, and go, wow, that was really some kind of run. It still is, and it's an ongoing run. You know, Nick's just, his attention to detail, he doesn't miss anything. I mean, they absolutely do not miss anything. And even when you see him on the road, I mean, when you see him in Tuscaloosa and, you know, the facilities and just the personnel they have, I mean, they have so many grad assistants and all that kind of stuff that are, you know, working on computers. And you go by the rooms when they're on the road, and, you know, some as you know, when you travel, they got the big banquet room. That's where you're going to eat. And then there's kind of just this part where, well, maybe you're going to get, you know, some work done on your ankle or whatever. I mean, it looks like a traveling hospital when you go with Alabama. They've got the whole hotel used in every meeting room, every conference room is either filled with computers, massage tables. You go through everything. And what they have on the road looks just like what they have at home. Now, maybe everybody's that way, but I don't think everybody covers all the bases like Nick does, and he covers them better than anybody, and he doesn't miss a detail. And so when you have that, and then you just have the acumen of being a great motivator, a great coach, having great personnel, and, you know, 5-star and 4-star recruits, and then the coaches you put around you, it's hard not to be good, and they're really good, and they're really good every year.
It's interesting. You mentioned in a previous answer, Brad, about, you know, there are certain places where at least they have some semblance of happiness right now, and there's a lot of unhappiness other places. How do you find the passion of the fan base in the Southeastern Conference now that you're going back through it again?
Especially from the standpoint of, you know, I've had so many people ask me, and I have never been an Instagram, Twitter guy until my daughter just did this a couple weeks ago, and I'm ready to strangle her. And she said, "Dad, trust me." She said, "I'm your daughter." I said, "That's why I don't trust you, you know." So I don't know what she did, but I don't even know what that means, but apparently I have a Twitter account now. But, you know, everybody is, you know, from what I've heard, they've said, "Well, you know, we miss Vern, but we'll give this guy a chance." Well, to say this guy, then they have been watching sports for 37 years. So, you know, I realize that people are going to be critical, or they're going to love you, or they're going to hate you. And as you know, doing a game, they're going to think you're a homer for Penn State and that you're against everybody else in the world and all that kind of stuff. Right. And here, it's 50-50. I mean, I could call a game, you know, as right down the middle as I try to do every week. And I know there are people that say, "Wow, he was for Alabama," or "Wow, he was for Georgia." I heard somebody say, somebody told me, "Well, the Vanderbilt fans were grumbling that you and Gary were all Alabama a couple of weeks ago." I said, "It was 59-0. What were we supposed to talk about?" So, but from that standpoint, I think it's kind of cool because at least they care, you know? They care enough to listen. They care enough to watch. They care enough to complain. They care enough to be in your corner if they want to be in your corner. So it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, it's like that in the Big Ten and a lot of places, too. It's just down here, and it seems like every school is that way and every city's that way. So yeah. I've known that for years, so it doesn't faze me too much.
Right. It's people laugh when you talk about the Twitter part because they know I'm not on anything either. So,
yeah.
You know, everybody knows that. It's interesting you mentioned that because years and years ago, decades ago, Kurt Gowdy called a Rose Bowl, and it was USC and Ohio State. And this is back in the day, of course, of mail. And he received bags of mail from Ohio State fans saying he was pro-USC, and he was really concerned about it to the point where he called NBC and said, "Hey, can you send me the tape? I want to see what they did wrong." And then all of a sudden, the next day, the West Coast mail came in. They said he was pro-Ohio State, and he told them to hold off on the tape. I did my job.
I could just see Kurt going through bags of mail. That would be perfect, right?
Now, that's a different era, Brad. That's a different era.
That is. That's a great story. I love that.
It is an absolute pleasure to catch up with you. You are unquestionably one of the best in the business. Great admiration for your work, as always. Thanks a lot for the time, Brad.
Thanks, brother. I know you got a really good team up there, and I've been trying to watch you. You had a close one a couple weeks ago. I saw when we were on the bus on our way home. So continued success. Have a good time with it.
We're enjoying it. Thanks so much.
All right, Steve.
Brad Nessler, one of the best in the business, without question. The privilege of knowing him for a long time. He's just one of those guys who's just as down to earth gets. As opposed to one of the guys we have on our Thursday time slots. Stop laughing, Sean.
That's all you did there.
See, the difference is, he'd ask how Deb was doing and relate it to nothing in his own life.
I could have sworn he did, but then he decided to turn back the clock.
Yeah.
1 year.
So, yeah. I know. You know. 1 year ago today, okay, everybody stop what you're doing. Kevin, how are you?
Okay. No, seriously, how are you?
No, I mean, really. Okay, you don't mind if we get back to Deb now, okay? He's actually going through something now. Brad's one of the best in the business. I mean, and you can just tell. He's just pro's pro, no ego, down to earth. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. For the host of the show, as enjoyable an hour of radio as you can get to with the guest list we've had today. Sean, brilliant job as always getting people together to put on the show. He is the driving force behind all of that. So, Sean, thank you as always, my friend, for great, great work.
Thank you, sir. And, of course, a great chance and an excuse to plug the podcast, because it's always great to replay the interviews. We'll, of course, archive them. So subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, Google Play. If you listen to us on iTunes, don't hesitate to leave us a review, or you can shoot us an email, stevejones@wkok.com.
Yeah, and I've got one here from Andrew. Sent it Monday. I guess I just got it now, so I apologize, Andrew. Wondering if he could talk today about the following. Offensive line troubles, particularly right side. Trace not getting comfortable in the pocket due to the O-line collapsing. Not every down Indiana was sending some kind of blitz. Oh, okay. Trace has been overshooting his throws at times. The bowl game, there was an underthrown ball that was picked and led to the USC comeback. Could this be something haunting him? All right. This team has arguably the best talent in the NCAA. It comes when it's firing on all cylinders. I'm hoping they find a way to fix the elements, large challenges ahead in the schedule. Curious as to what you and Jack see, and if these observations are being spoken about between you guys as well. Keep up the work. Appreciate that. Look forward to hearing your answers and feedback in the coming days. Andrew, what I'll do is I'll address each one of these in the next half hour, if that's fair, because we don't have with the bottom of the hour coming up. I will get into that because these are good questions, and we'll get into some of the things that he wants to get to and to talk about. They're all good questions, and all of them deserve some sort of answer. Some of them you can answer, and others, like, well, you know, I'm not quite sure how to answer it, but I'm going to give it a shot. Okay. We'll do that. So, by the way, Jason Kabinda, a lot impact player of the week. Congratulations to him He had a really good game. He's coming off a 14-tackle performance on Saturday. We got our high school previews coming up on Thursday. Now, you've got the schedule. Of course, I don't know if you have that in front of you at the moment.
No, one game I can tell you for sure. Sewens Grove with their 25-6 win over Jersey Shore last week, while Shikellamy gets their turn against Jersey Shore this Friday night. But it'll be up at Thompson Street Stadium. Sewens Grove travels
by the way, the suit is not well liked. It was a few years ago. The suit talked about the Jersey Shore football program and did not do it in what you would call glowing terms.
Yeah.
Jersey Shore, since that day, has been on a roll. And every time they walk in the locker room, they see his picture with the quotes.
So, yep, we got Shikellamy at Jersey Shore, Sewens Grove at Mifflinburg on Friday night. Lewisburg travels to Danville.
Okay. And who's Milton have?
And Milton takes on Mount Carmel. They'll be back home. So Milton, three straight weeks giving up 70-plus points. So we're hoping for a good, tight nip-and-tuck battle with Mount Carmel on Friday night.
You know what? I've got a feeling Milton's going to play a really good game on Friday night. Don't ask me why. It's just a gut feeling. And then, of course, Shikellamy has the Suit Bowl coming up. They don't like him there.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Thanks to Brad Nessler of CBS Sports for being on the show today. Thanks to Teddy Greenstein, Chicago Tribune, for being on the show today. All right, let's get to it. I had this email forwarded from Andrew. And it said, good afternoon, Steve. Wonder if we could talk some today. And he sent it yesterday. So, Andrew, I apologize. I didn't get the email till just now. So, but I know we'll reply and make sure you know where it is on the podcast. So we'll take them one at a time. Offensive line troubles, particularly on the right side. All right, let's start there. It's not easy when you have, in five games, three different starting right tackles. And that's been because of, obviously, injuries. Chaz Wright had to go out. Andrew Nelson started at Iowa. Then he had to go out. And Will Fries. So you've lost that a little bit along the way because you haven't had the same person over there consistently starting. I think in the end, the person that's going to consistently start there, or at least has a good chance of doing, is Chaz Wright. And I think that if he gets in there, he has the ability, in my opinion, to anchor that side. I also expect Will Fries to continue to play because Will Fries is getting a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And playing time is the only way you're actually going to really get better out there. But you can afford to do it by weaning him into the lineup. So I think as time goes, Andrew, watch for Chaz Wright to get a little bit more ingrained as that starting right tackle. And I think that will help stabilize the line because now you can get the cohesion that you're looking for. Next line, Andrew says, Trace not getting comfortable in the pocket due to O-line collapsing. Indiana, to his credit, did a great job of not only using its blitz in that game, but also how they timed up their blitz. And remember, they did a great job against Penn State last year when it came to what they were doing out there. I mean, they did a great job last year against Penn State's offense. So Tom Allen has done a good job with some experienced people, especially a guy like Tigray Scales, for example, who is really an excellent linebacker, as you can see, the way he plays. You can see the way they time up the blitz, the way they scrape off the blitz, and you're not going to face many teams that time it up the way Indiana does, and they've been had the ability to outnumber Penn State in the box. That also means that Trace has to do a good job of identifying the hot read, because when they do that, that means it's man-to-man, and there's got to be one or two hot reads in there that he needs to do a good job of getting the ball to. Trace has been overshooting his throws at times. In the Pitt game, yes, I would agree with that. I think he was just too geared up for that game. And anytime you're too geared up, you're going to throw the ball high. He also has done a good job, though. Keep in mind, he's only thrown four interceptions through five games so far. And part of that is the ability to sit there and say, it's not there, I'm just getting rid of it. And that's how you end up with a relatively high completion percentage, low interception number. He's got 12 touchdowns to four interceptions. So the overshooting throws at times, I think, more applies to the Pitt game than any other game, because I just felt he was a little too geared up for that one. Let's see. Bowl game, he underthrew the ball, picked off, led to the USC comeback. Yeah, but you know what? I saw that play because, when you have a wide view like we do, he was trying to get the ball to Gesicki. Gesicki was open on the play, and Trace just didn't get it to him, and it was picked off by, I want to say McCray is the one that picked him up. Let's see. Best talent in the NCAA when it's firing on cylinders. I hope they find a way to fix the ailments. Large challenges ahead. No question. Good. Exactly right, Andrew. Curious as to what you and Jack see and what your observations are. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking at. Right now, I think they're doing a good job in the offense of taking, for the most part, what a defense gives them. Thus, you'll see them dump the ball off to Barkley. I would like to see them get Mike Gesicki more ingrained in what's going on. I felt Mike in the first couple of games was really in the flow. In the Iowa game, he had Gesicki twice for touchdowns, and each time the ball got knocked down at the line of scrimmage. And part of that goes back to what Andrew, you're talking about. They didn't do a good job of chipping when it came to the rush off the edge, and they were able to extend their hands and get them up off a block. And so they've got to do a better job of chipping guys at times. But you're right. The right tackle spot needs to be stabilized with one person, and they haven't had that one person because they've had two guys get hurt there. And that does wreck the continuity of what you're having. Mann didn't play a game. That meant Gonzalez had to flip to the right side, which wasn't the most comfortable move for him. That way they could get Fries in as a left guard. It tells you what they think about Fries. They obviously feel that right now he's their number six offensive lineman. Bates has been good the entire time. For the most part, McGovern's been good. But they've got to do a better job when being outnumbered in the box of either getting one additional blocker in there, whether it happens to be the tight end or Barkley, or identifying a hot read and making them pay for the blitz. You know, you can make teams pay for the blitz because they're going to go man-to-man, and you can beat them off of that if you're quick. And Trace does see the field really, really well. He does see the field well. You can't make that pass like he did in the opener to Akron, where suddenly he sees him because he just has a feel for what's going on. And that feel for the game that McSorley has is a big plus. The fact he's always keeping his head up looking to make a pass play is a big plus. So stabilizing the right side, and I think that person, in my opinion, is going to be Chaz Wright in combination with a little bit of Will Fries. Overshooting throws at times happens, but for the most part, I felt that happened in the Pitt game. I just think the emotion of it, and he was just, hyped up and ready to go. And let's see. Look at the throw he made to Hamilton for a touchdown, both touchdowns that he threw. Hamilton got three, one was from Barkley. But the one was the fade to the corner. The other one was a fade to the corner. Each one was put in exactly the right spot. The throw he made to Blacknall on fourth down was a fabulous throw. The throw he made to Johnson for the touchdown, fabulous throw. So he is achieving a better line of consistency, because remember, he was a 56% passer overall for the season last year. He's a 66% guy this year. And again, the 12 touchdowns and the four interceptions through five games is pretty good. And he's running the ball just enough. But again, you've got to get a little bit more out of the running game, certain situations. But Indiana did this last year. Remember, Indiana, 33 carries, 53 yards for Saquon Barkley against Indiana last year. So they kind of did it the same thing this year. And I think that that's where they deserve. Sometimes, Joe told me a few years ago, he says, always remember something. Sometimes when things don't look great for Penn State, remember it's because the other guy can do something right too. And Indiana, to their credit, I think did something right. And I hope, Andrew, that answers some of your questions there along the way. I think I hit all of them, right?
I believe he did. But talking a little bit more about the Penn State defense, I mean, look what they have done so far as we've gone past the quarter pole. Oh. Go past the Pitt game. Man. They now have a quarterback controversy. Now Indiana in the rearview mirror, they've got a quarterback controversy. Both teams have had to switch quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that when you look at the job the defense has done, Marcus Allen is having a really good year. Jason Kabinda has really started to now get himself into the position where he's having a really good year. I think Grant Haley has had a really good year. I think Christian Campbell, nobody talks about Christian Campbell. I think quietly he's having a really good year. Now, you're going to have to do a good job this week on this team in Northwestern. But I think one of the things you have to do against Northwestern right off the top is that if you can control the Northwestern running attack, I think you now have a really good chance of garnering control over Northwestern. The two games they've lost this year, they couldn't run the football, which is difficult to say with a guy like Justin Jackson, but I know Jackson's been fighting an ankle injury. And so the Larkin kid, the redshirt freshman, has had to step in and play, and he was actually the leading rusher against Wisconsin. And I think that's, you know, you look at the two games they lost, Duke and Wisconsin. Now, both of them on the road, but each time they had their running game controlled. And even though Clayton Thorson against Wisconsin had really great numbers, he threw for 370. That's not going to get it done usually because Northwestern really does rely on some balance in the attack to really be successful. Well, Penn State has to take that balance away and force Thorson to try and win the game throwing the ball. And Northwestern has a good defense, not a great defense. And this is the kind of game where I think Barkley's got a chance to have a good day running the football. I will say this, Patty Fisher, the middle linebacker, who has now stepped in, to his credit, he is a really good football player. He's really a good player. I'm impressed by him. That's a good middle linebacker. Because, I mean, a lot of people wonder, that Nathan Fox might be the guy, and Pat Fisher has stepped in there, and he plays the spot, I think, the way Pat Fitzgerald wants him to play the spot. Sam Miller on the edge, not bad. Tyler Lancaster in the middle. Lancaster, when he's really on his game, it'll be easy to spot. He wears number one. When he's on his game, he can clog the middle. But he's also the kind of guy at times that will take some plays off. The other linebackers are okay. Nate Hall's not bad. The secondary, Godwin Igwebuike, is really good. Don't sit back and say, oh no, they don't have anything there. They've got plenty there in the secondary. He's pretty good. Cal Caro's not bad either. The place kicker is a true freshman, so I don't really have a real feel on him. I mean, he's 3 of 4 kicking so far, but nice winder, is not a bad punter. He's actually a really good punter. Return game is not quite the same because no Solomon Vault. Vault's out for the year. And he hurt Penn State. That game that they beat Penn State 2 years ago out there, remember, Vault returned a kickoff for a touchdown in that game. Now you have Penn State special teams with their coverage, their punting, their kickoff unit. Penn State has done a great job with their special teams this year, creating field position. Penn State is they're a plus 10 yards per possession right now on the season in field position. Hey, that's going to win so many games for you, shortening the field, making them go a long, long way with them. Let's see. Penn State's average drive start this year is their own 35-yard line, and the opposing team drive start is the 23-yard line. All right, so you're talking about, 68 possessions, right? So let's just do this, just to let you know what Penn State's doing here. So it's 68 possessions times 12 yards differential is 816 yards divided by 5 games. which is 163 yards per game in field position for Penn State. Now remember, 2 years ago when Penn State went out there, that number was flipped. Penn State was on the negative of field position in 2014 and 15, and it made a big difference. And now you're looking at Penn State dramatically on the plus side, 163 yards a game. I'll give you another example of where Penn State owns field position at now, and this shows you through five games what we've been watching. Penn State has started 14 drives this season on the opponent's side of the field, or as we refer to as the plus side of the field. You want to know how many the opponent has started on the plus side of the field against Penn State this year? One. That's a big difference. The opponent has not scored in the opening drive this year. They have not scored on the opening drive of the second half this year. Penn State's 3 of 5 in its opening drives and 2 of 5 in the second half on opening drives. You take advantage of all those plays along the way. And Penn State has 44 explosive plays this year on the season to 18 for the opponent. So those are all things that you look at that are the game within the game. They're, you know, stats that have some meaning and beef to them. I'll give you an example. A stat I look at on Pro Football Focus. What is the completion percentage of the quarterback Penn State's facing when under pressure? Well, Clayton Thorson's a 36% passer when he has some pressure on him. And he's thrown 3 interceptions and no touchdowns when pressured. That's an example. Something else I look, yards per catch by wideouts and tight ends. 3.3 yards. Excuse me, I think it's less than 3.1 yard. 3.1 is the yardage after the catch. So that tells you that's a station-to-station passing game across the board for Northwestern. So just some thoughts. Random thoughts on a random day. We'll come back. We'll talk about the baseball playoffs. Yankees and Twins tonight. Should it be a one-game playoff or should it be more on News Radio 1070 WKOK?
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Years ago, when the baseball playoff went to a one-game playoff, I didn't like it. My first thought was, well, you know, traditionally in baseball, you play a 2 out of 3. Look, I obviously, as a Red Sox fan in 1978, I lived through a one-game playoff that didn't go well. Now, I'm not saying I'm bitter. It just was hard to see a 99-win team get nothing.
I don't get that impression from you whatsoever.
No. You're never to bring up the topic again.
No, I won't. I think my feel with the one game, you go through that 162 game grind, and then just to have it all end in one game. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it does most of the time, a huge amount of the time, depending on the score, of course, it can be a great 3-hour power play and fun to watch on TV.
I mean, I've changed my feeling about it over time. And, you know, Roger was talking to us earlier about this off the air, and I understand exactly where he's coming from because I have felt the same way. It should be a best 2 out of 3, at least, you know, when you get in there, it gives you a little fudge factor, especially if you're really the dominant team like the Yankees should be tonight. I mean, the Yankees are the one that are really rolling the dice on risk tonight. They're the ones that put together the great stretch run. They're the ones that really have had a really good season. The Twins have had a miracle comeback, a 100-plus loss team a year ago. to 85 wins in the playoffs this year. That's tremendous. But the Twins really don't have any pressure on them tonight. They lose, they're expected to lose. They win, it's like, hey, great, we're going to Cleveland. We got to face Corey Kluber. Oh, well, that's okay. We're still going to Cleveland. And for Major League Baseball, they're sitting there saying, well, truth be known, if we really like to see the Yankees move on for ratings, that'd be great. But this is where I've come around on the one-game playoff. I like the fact that everything's there in one game. And these playoff games, for the most part, have been really good games. Think about it. I think they're really... And the emotion. You'll find the emotion in the stadium tonight. And the same thing tomorrow night at Chase Field in Phoenix. Because everything's on the line. I mean, the fans are going to be on every single pitch. And the 3-1. It's a strike. Place goes crazy. So that part I do like. And I do understand Roger's point completely about, because I felt the same way. But over time, after now watching this play out, after now watching this play out over 5 years, the emotion in the stadium or the ballpark, I do find captivating. So, just a thought. And, you know, each team has been able to set up their pitching where they get their ace tonight. Same thing tomorrow night with Colorado and Arizona. Johnny Gray is going to go tomorrow night for Colorado, and Zach Greinke is going to go for Arizona. So each team has their ace. And here's the penalty, by the way, of being in a one-game playoff. The winner will have used their ace in game one. So in other words, each team to get in will have used their ace to try and advance. So that ace can't come back maybe until game three of the best of five set. So that is the penalty for being in the one-game playoff. You've been able to set up your pitching all the way around. All four teams have their pitching set up to have their ace go. So the penalty for being in the one-game playoff and not being a divisional winner is that you get to use your ace once in the divisional series instead of maybe potentially twice. Give you an example. The Red Sox will play Houston. Chris Sale can go in games 1 and 5 if they need it. Right? The Yankees, the Twins, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies will get to pitch their ace in one game of the playoff, probably game 3.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.